The order of Stanislaus County Board of Supervisors, please rise for a salute for our flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, this is the time that we have public comment. Any member of the public wish to comment on something that is not on the agenda? You have something, please approach the podium and state your name and the city you live in for the record.
Good evening, I'm Kate Trompeter from Modesto, California.
Can you turn the volume up, please?
I'm here tonight representing a group of young people who were unable to join me, but I'm a program coordinator in Youth Services Department at Center for Human Services, which is a local not-for-profit here in Modesto that serves the greater Stanislaus County. We have a group that's funded through Friday Night Live called the Teen Alcohol and Drug Abuse Prevention Team, who every year organize and put on a candlelight vigil in tribute to those who've lost their lives to drinking or drug driving accidents in our county. And every year the Board of Supervisors declares the month of December Drinking and Drug Driving Awareness Month for us. So the young people I work with ask that I come here tonight just to thank you for doing that. I believe it's on your agenda this evening to do that again. And they've also sent me with invitations for each of you to join us on December 4th at 6:30 just outside your building so that you can see what it is that they do and work so hard on. So that's it.
Okay, thank you. Is there anyone else in the public who would like to make a comment on something that is not on the agenda? Okay, seeing none, we will move to the consent calendar. We have a request to pull B2.
B3, Mr. Chairman. We have a business relationship with that contractor and have recently done work for them, so I'll step down for that item.
And Supervisor O'Brien?
And item A5 for a separate vote, please.
Is that B5?
A5.
Oh, A?
A.
Anybody else would like to pull anything from the calendar? Okay, seeing none, we have a motion for the remainder of the calendar.
So move.
Second.
A motion made by Supervisor O'Brien, seconded by Supervisor Grover. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 And those opposed? Motion is carried 4-0. Okay. Item A5.
Mr. Chairman, item A5 is the meeting calendar for next year for Board of Supervisors. As I always have, I always pull this item off, and I'm not one who favors canceling so many meetings, so I will just ask for a separate vote on this issue.
Okay. The comment that I make on these meetings are not canceled, they're just not set. As you know, many of the city councils meet maybe twice a month or so, and when they don't meet, they every other Tuesday. That doesn't mean their meeting is canceled, it means they're just not having one. So I just wanted to make that comment.
Move approval of item A5.
Second it.
Okay, motion's been made by Supervisor Grover, seconded by Supervisor Monteith. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
No.
Okay, motion's carried 3-1. Okay, we will move to item B2. Well, I still got B2. I had a question about this. I could pull this out. Is there anybody for Denise Hunt here?
Madeline Schaefer is here.
The question I have is in the proposed bylaws, there's a clause new that prohibits county employees from being members of the board, which that seems strange. And we do have one supervisor that's on that board who's technically a county member.
For the mental health board.
Yeah, this is the bylaws of the changes to the bylaws of the Mental Health Board?
Yes.
Yes. What section is that?
B2.
Section in the bylaws, which?
The first one, addition of the clause that prohibits county employees from being members.
Under the staff report, under discussion.
Actually, our bylaws do not prohibit county employees from being members. They prohibit behavioral health and recovery service members from being. That was an error. It states that employees of behavioral health and recovery services cannot be members, but we do have county employees who are members. I believe that was...
I'm county supervisor. And that's a county council. Can we just amend this line?
Yeah, actually, you wouldn't be required to amend the line. The bylaws themselves are correct. The discussion item, the agenda item itself, it misstates that. In the discussion, it would say the addition of a clause that prohibits BHRS and...
Under Section 2, prohibited membership,
yeah.
It says no member of shall be a full-time or part-time employee of Stanislaus County Behavioral Health and Recovery Services or an employee of the State Department of Mental Health. So that they can be a county employee, and we do have county employees on our mental health board.
So the bylaw itself is correct in
yes.
the agenda.
Yes, the agenda
write-up
is incorrect.
Okay, so all right. As long as the bylaws are correct, because this did not, there was a conflict there, and I figured out
Thank
what
you
that
for
was.
Asking for the clarification on that.
Motion to approve.
Second.
And motion made by Supervisor O'Brien and seconded by Supervisor Grover to approve. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion carried 4-0. Agenda item B3, approval of award of a construction contract for emergency power and fire suppression system improvements. Apparently, Supervisor Grover has a conflict because he's done business from before. The minutes should note that Supervisor Grover has left the dais and the room.
Motion. Second.
And motion has been made to approve by Supervisor Monteith, seconded by Supervisor O'Brien. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion carried 3-0-1. Then we will move to item B13. Acceptance of the Advisory Board on Substance Abuse Programs in the Annual Report for Fiscal Year 2007-2008.
Good evening. I'm Madeline Schlepper, Associate Director of Behavioral Health and Recovery Services. I'm very pleased to be able to introduce Jeff Gulo, who is current chairperson of the Advisory Board on Alcohol and Drug Programs. I work closely with Jeff at our subcommittee, which is addressing issues down at Stanislaus Recovery Center. So I know this group of individuals to be a very committed, concerned group, and they were appointed by you. They're volunteers, but they contribute a great deal to our department. They've made a great effort to have us focus on what we're doing and outcomes and how our clients are treated and how the entire programs operate. So I'm very pleased to introduce Jeff Gulo, who will give the presentation.
Should have given her more stuff to say. Good evening, Chairperson DeMartini, Supervisor CEO Robinson, Mr. Dorian, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Jeff Gulo. I've been the chairperson for the past year of your Advisory Board on Substance Abuse Programs. I'll be making the report to you. It's an annual report tonight, along with our vice chairperson, Donna Sasek-Miller, who's also here. I'm just going to give a couple very basic things. I'm going to try really hard tonight not to bore you. If I go too long, I'll be looking up, just yawn a little bit, and I promise to cut it short.
Now, this is your annual report. You take all the time you need.
Thanks. Thank you. We are appointed by you, and the purpose is to provide advice and oversight to Stanislaus County Behavior Health and Recovery Services on their alcohol and drug treatment programs. But we take this very seriously, and we feel like we're representing the citizens of Stanislaus County as well. We meet monthly. In according to all the rules of the state of California and this county, we have to, of course, meet publicly. And we have several committees here. I probably will just skip over them. We have several programs that we monitor. I've got a lot of statistics, and I know some of you have read the report, and I'll just try to point out some of the ones I think are. Now, the reason we use this is, one, we know the situation the county's in, and money is short. We believe these programs are wonderful, desperately needed, and incredibly effective. And if you look at the statistics, I think they'll bear my statement out. But I'm going to let Donna come up here first, and I'll finish off. Thanks.
Well, good evening. Good to see all of you again. We mainly look at educational issues with SRC, Stanislaus Recovery Center, cultural competency, Prop 36. We also look at prevention, drug court, safety center, and of course, you know, the three of our members are part of law enforcement, which we do like to have there to get their insight into this. Myself and Jeff McCarty have spent a lot of time with the prevention area, and what's really exciting about that area, and there is some funding for that, is the flexibility and the new process of what's going on. Ruben Imperial is the head of prevention, and in September we formed a prevention group, members of the community, that will go out and it's a broad bylaws. It makes this whole prevention area very, very flexible, and I think that's what we're looking for in this area. So anything that comes up can be tackled by this group. There are about 18 members. We already have our co-chairs, which are Tom Nipper and Marty Villa, and that's an exciting area. One of our presentations that we've had recently was about drug court and about the process of one of our people, community people, going through a process in Norco, which was a long, involved process. I believe it was 3 years. And so we're looking into that to see if we could have more people that will qualify for that program and see how expensive it is and if it's worthwhile to pursue it more. What else have we done? Red Ribbon. Red Ribbon hits all the schools, from grade school, middle school, and high school. And we teamed up with the Center for Human Services and, of course, the Board of Education. And Jeff McCarty and I were able to judge two high schools. It's an exciting time because you get to be really involved with the students in part of that prevention area, and I really, really enjoyed that myself. Our groups are very active. Many of our dedicated members of this advisory board spend a lot of time filling in for other people. Not only do we show up for our board meetings, but we also have to belong on one of these other committee groups. I myself am looking at trying to go to each different group, go to drug court, go to Prop 6, and visit all these just to get a feel for the whole area that the county has services provided for. SRC was exciting to go to and listen to all the wonderful people there and the things that they're doing. They, too, are very flexible, and the BHRS people have been very good and open to any suggestions that we have. Thank you.
Okay, I was just looking at all the different things, the different committees, the different programs the county offers, and I'm counting 15 that we monitor, so I'm not going to bring them all up. To be quite honest with you, I was shocked. I had no idea the county had such a comprehensive system of treating with dealing with these problems. So just from as a private citizen, I was really impressed. And the people in here, from my own personal experience, I think most of the people involved in this area, even the ones that work for the county, it's a calling, I would say. They love this area. They're motivated. They like helping people, just like you. And it's not always a fun job. Let's see. We have. Of course, Stanislaus Recovery Center is the kind of the jewel of the system, and they saw 995 different individuals this past year in their residential treatment program, 415 in the day treatment program, and 548 in intensive outpatient treatment program. All the figures I'm going to refer to are from CalOMS, California Outcomes Measurement System. Each county is required to provide this data to the state, and so we can measure our data to the state as a whole, and I guarantee you, we always come up looking pretty good. The overall completion rate for the past calendar year for Stanislaus Recovery Center was 62% for the residential, 53% for the day treatment program, and 41% for the intensive outpatient program. Now, these programs, when you measure them back to back to back, there is aftercare as well. Oftentimes goes past a year. So these people will be in treatment in one of these programs for over a year, up to over a year. Probably because it's easier to measure outcomes while we have a hold of them. These statistics are going to refer to people that are actually in this first year while they're still in a program that the county runs. So we had an average completion rate of 54% across all levels, and that's about 8% higher than the state as a whole. During the time they were in, again, this could be as long as a year or more. And I don't know. It actually amazes me. People that were abstinent from alcohol and drugs during this period were 82.1% for drug users, 81% for alcohol users, and 76.2% for injecting users. And this is a huge difference between statewide success, which is about 20% less along the line. So we're looking very good. I think it's partly because of the programs, specific programs they have out there, and I think it has an awful lot to do with the motivation of the counselors and the administrators out there. They have a total of 72 beds for the residential treatment out at Stanislaus Recovery Center. And eight of them are for the co-occurring tract. It's a model program for the whole state now. These are people that have substance abuse problems and mental health issues as well. And so they're treated both these diseases at the same time. And I don't know. It's just been found that people that are suffering from severe mental illness can try all they want to get off alcohol and drugs, and it's a very, very difficult proposition. So this method of going after both of them at the same time has been very successful. Personally, I would like to congratulate Santa Claus Recovery Center. The state licensing board, it's called the State Department of Alcohol and Drug Programs. They license alcohol and drug treatment facilities for the state of California. Paid a surprise visit to Santa Claus Recovery Center earlier in the year, and we received an almost unheard of score of 100% for compliance with regard to the audit criteria. And that really is just not given, and so I was impressed. I keep trying to be critical of these people and find places to help them improve, but when they do things like that, it makes it tough. Jeff McCarty, who Donna mentioned before, and I are both on the Santa Claus Recovery Center subcommittee. And through that, you know, I would really like to point out that 300 people who were admitted to Santa Claus Recovery Center this past year were homeless when they were admitted. I mean, these are the people that probably need the treatment more than anybody. And the Aspen Family Medical Group, free of charge, gives these people a physical. People that enter any of our facilities, our treatment programs, have to be medically cleared. I'm sure it's for insurance purposes, but and for getting accreditation, but they can't afford to go to a doctor, most of these folks. So Aspen Family Medical Group is doing it free of charge, and that's quite something. And for those same individuals, normally if they are given a prescription, they can't afford it. And so with the help of donations from the Alumni Association of Santa Claus County, which consists of the alumni that have gone through Santa Claus Recovery Center, and other members of the committee, we set up a kind of a fund that pays for prescriptions for people who need it, thus giving them a better chance of making it. So that's some of the ways we're helping out. The same committee also, we put together kind of a fundraiser. Some of us approached private members of the community and even members of our board itself, and we raised enough money to buy SRC 10 picnic tables. They didn't have places to sit down. And even some of the parents of people that were in there have thanked us for that. I think they probably appreciated it more than the people in there. But and we're back. It looks like we're going to be able to buy about 5 more here in the next month. So that's a good deal. Madeline will probably be cross with me if I don't mention this. We have we call it just a secret shopper program. She calls it the NIATX process improvement model. But for you and I, a secret shopper program where people will go through. What we do is we have them called from actually calling, trying to find help and trying to find the center in the phone book, to actually showing up to get an assessment, to going through the interview and that kind of thing. All these different processes are evaluated by these people that do these walkthroughs, and hopefully that can make them more effective and efficient in what they're doing. First Step is a really good program out there as well. It's on the same campus. It's for women who are either pregnant or have a child from 1 to 5 years. And anyone who's pregnant or in that situation, if they're on alcohol or drugs, they're at high risk. And our county has had a problem with, we were 47th out of 58 counties in infant mortality a few years back. So we have the need, and these people are doing a fine job there. We lost the teens, our recovery center, just for budgetary reasons, back in May of this year. So at present, we have absolutely no treatment services for teens. You know, I know what the situation is, but it's our job to point these things out, and it would be nice if the young people had a place to go when they need help. So, okay, in conclusion, you've probably heard us say it before, and you've probably heard it other places, that for every dollar spent on alcohol or drug treatment, approximately $7 is saved down the line, either through medical savings or police law enforcement costs. And so with that in mind, some of the statistics here I'll go through very quickly, just I hope proves the point, or it sure looks like it proves the point. During the time that people were in treatment, which again covers up to a year or more of time, some of these things happen. Let's see. There's a 44% decrease in the number of emergency room visits. There's a 71.1% decrease in overnight hospital stays, and a 48% decrease in physical health problems. And this was a that's way, way better than what the state is doing as a whole. So they're doing something right out there. For mental health outpatient emergency services, they decreased by 32.5%, and 24-hour psychiatric hospital stays decreased by 51%. And arrests decreased by 55%, and jail days decreased by 41%. And this, again, is for people that are in treatment. And it doesn't just apply to when they're in a residential treatment program, they can't get out and they can't, you know, get a hold of anything. It also includes up to 11 other months where they're out there and they can do anything they want to. So it is rather a remarkable statistic, I think. With that, I'm really here at the very end. It's been suggested that alcohol, it's difficult for people to understand why people don't get this first time they go through treatment. And as a kind of as a comparison, people that have diabetes often go years without realizing they have the problem. Even when they find out they have the problem, they often ignore it and don't get treatment for it. And then when they do get treatment for it, they often ignore the doctor's advice and don't get on the proper diet, don't do the exercise, don't take their medication, or they go back and forth. And in much the same way, alcoholics and addicts are identical to that. When you're an alcoholic or an addict, it is a lifelong problem. You have to be vigilant. You have to do all of the things that got you clean and sober in the first place. And for some people, that requires several attempts at it. I don't like to think there's ever a loss just because someone doesn't make it the first time. It's not a waste. It's a real, you know, individual, and it's a terrible problem. And it has been shown to be highly inheritable, the genes. I don't know. I've read studies that suggest it's up in the 90 percentile of people just inherit the gene that passes on these. I think there are three or four genes that pass this trait on. So it is a tough deal. One thing I would like to say, since we always look at these guys and try to find their weaknesses, our advisory board on substance abuse programs a few years ago supported a social host ordinance, and that is where the cities pass an ordinance that basically enforces it makes parents liable when their kids have parties with beer and other things, that kind of deal. As of now, every city in the Stanislaus County except for Houston has adopted one. and the unincorporated areas of Stanislaus County. So we would strongly recommend that the county adopt such a social ordinance. You know, you look at these volunteers, they don't get anything. I guess they just care. We've got a lot of good people, and a lot of new people have joined in the last month or two from all different backgrounds. I'm looking forward to the future, and I think it's a really good committee. I thank you for appointing me, and I guess if you have any questions.
Are there any questions of the board for Mr. Gello?
Excuse me, I'd like to apologize for the phone interruption.
I was going to say I'm glad I'm not the only one it happens to.
So thank you for your dedication and the entire group. I realize you're volunteers and do this at your own time, and thank you for your service to our community.
Thank you.
A very good report with some statistical evidence that these programs are working. Okay, is there a motion to approve the report?
So moved. Second.
Okay, made by Supervisor Monteith, seconded by Supervisor Grover. Any further discussion? Comments? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion carried 4-0. Okay, we will move to item D3, approval to amend the Community Development Block Grant Consolidation Plan.
Yes, good evening. Chairman, members of the board, Kirk Ford, your interim planning director. And we have before you this evening a request to amend our Community Development Block Grant Consolidated Plan and our Fiscal Year 2008-2009 Annual Action Plan, specifically to incorporate the Housing and Urban Development's Neighborhood Stability Stabilization Program funding to the tune of about $9.7 million for our block grant consortium. HUD requires that the plan be submitted back to them by December 1st, and we completed the draft of this plan and opened up a 15-day comment period back on November 3rd. To date, we've received only one formal comment letter, which focused kind of on the methodology of the allocations defined in the plan. With me this evening is Aaron Farnan, who has worked very diligently over the past several weeks, along with Juan Gonzalez and staff from each of our consortium members, to meet this rapid turnaround that was required by HUD. With that, I'm going to let Aaron give you some background of the program, define the allocation process and methodologies, and talk to you about what the consortium hopes to do with this funding. So, Aaron?
Good afternoon, Aaron Farnan, Associate Planner. Thank you, Chairman DeMartini, CEO Mr. Robertson, Mr. Doring, and board members. The purpose of this funding is to focus on foreclosed homes or abandoned properties and to assist to either rehab, resell, or redevelop them in a manner that will help stabilize the targeted neighborhoods to stem the decline of the neighborhood home values. A bit of the background, it was initiated under the Housing Economic Recovery Act, or HERA, in 2008. It sets aside a total of $3.92 billion to assist states and localities in redeveloping these efforts. It's a special allocation under CDBG, but it has a specific purpose. Under these allocations, HUD used certain criteria and tools to decide how to allocate those funds. Three main areas were home foreclosures, subprime mortgages, and homes that are either in default or in jeopardy of being delinquent. Based on these criteria, our locality and staff recommended a breakup as follows, and they used the same methodology under the idea of the greatest need for foreclosure, concentration within areas, percentage of subprime loans, and the devaluation of housing values within those set areas. There's a number of eligible uses for these funds, primarily the purchase and redevelopment of foreclosed homes through financing mechanisms, or the purchase and rehab of foreclosed homes to sell, rent, or redevelop and bring them back into the market. The process of land banking if it takes more than 18 months to process the initial transfer of the unit. And then also demolition of blighted structures to reconstruct them and re-enter them into the market. One criteria of the funding is at least 25% of the overall allocation must be targeted to serve those below the 50% of the area median income. And the remainder can serve up to 120% of the area median income for the locality. Our methodology is recommending focusing on expansion of existing programs to target these needs through housing rehabilitation, first-time home buyer down payment assistance, and also land acquisition for those units that need to be transferred back into the market. For minimum thresholds, we have certain performance measurements you're required to report to HUD. This is a range of those performance measurements. It focuses on our partnering cities because under the consortium, we partner with Ceres, Newman, Oakdale, Patterson, and Waterford. We also see the importance of partnering with the city of Modesto in areas such as Weed and Seed and airport neighborhoods. We as staff don't have the capacity or expertise to do the actual management of the program. We can do oversight, but we recommend partnering with entities like the Housing Authority, Habitat for Humanity, and also partnerships with other banks and financial institutions that have grant programs where they consist in reducing the cost of the homes. The initial timelines we have to meet is we have to submit a substantially completed plan by December 1st, and with hopes and intentions that we will then get approval in early to mid-January to actually begin implementing the program. These funds must be used within 18 months. We do have the possibility over 5 years through rent-to-own type programs of that nature to transition them to long-term rentals or home ownership opportunities. But the initial commitment of all the funds needs to take place within that 18-month period. Just to go over once again, there's methodology that staff recommends relating to the distribution of the funds. Once again, it's the concentration of foreclosures within targeted areas, percentage of subprime loans, and the decline of housing values within those targeted areas. Thought it'd be useful just to show a couple examples of that so it gives you a visual picture. It helps quite a bit. Here's a couple examples. Patterson, one of our consortium members, as you can see, they have a high concentration of foreclosure rates, high percentage of subprime loans, and a high percentage of declining home values. As you can see from that diagram, it's pretty considerable. Not only that, areas like Weed and Seed area also have generally high percentage of subprime loans, but more in the medium area of foreclosure rates and declining home values in comparison to the recent loss in areas like Patterson. It's a lot more considerable. A couple other areas of Salida, they also meet all the high criteria for those three designations, as well as Keys, and they have a bit of a lower decline in housing values in relation to other areas like Patterson and Salida. And one last sample target area is Shackelford. They have high foreclosure rates as well as subprime loans, a high percentage of those, as well as a medium decline in housing values. Meanwhile, an area like our partnering Oakdale, theirs is more in the median area, but they still have a high level of subprime loans. So today's staff is required to comment that we finished the 15-day public review period and that final action is to amend this plan and submit it to HUD and have it posted on the internet by December 1st. Staff today recommends closing the 15-day public comment period and recommends approval of the amendment of the 2007-12 consolidated plan, the 08-09 action plan, to incorporate the Neighborhood Stabilization Program amendment and the funding of approximately just over $7.9 million and direct staff to forward this plan then to Housing and Urban Development. We're also recommend directing Mr. Robinson, CEO, to sign the relevant documentation and request the auditor controller to increase the estimated revenues and appropriations accordingly. And I'll turn it back to Mr. Ford.
Yeah, that's basically it. If you have any questions, we'd be happy to answer them.
Supervisor O'Brien?
Just two quick ones. First of all, is this a grant program or a loan program to individuals?
It depends. We have a sliding scale. If they're below the 50%, it would be a deferred grant. In many cases, if it transfers for home ownership, we recommend they then pay that back once they're able to get the equity out of the home or sell the home. So that way we can continue the program and expand it.
So it's just a loan at 0% we get back once the property sells?
Correct.
Okay. And the second question is, say we expand the first-time home buyer program, and we put money into a home, and the home value declines. We're probably in the second.
We are in the second.
And so if that were to decline in home value, this program loses that money.
Right. Okay. Nice time to start, though.
Just want to understand it, but, I mean, I think that's this is the best way to use this money.
This program is supposed to begin on April 1st, staff report.
That would be the time that we would have completed all the contractual agreements with the partner entities like Housing Authority Habitat. Hopefully we can do that sooner. It depends on the approval from Housing and Urban Development, but that would be probably the latest it would start.
Any further questions of staff?
Thank
you. Members of the public, wish to comment? Please state your name and city you live in, please.
I'm Wayne Bridegroom. I live at 1109 Faustina Avenue in the Weed and Seed neighborhood. I'm the pastor of Central Baptist Church, so obviously speaking for the five congregations there, a board member for Congregations Building Communities, and one of the steering committee members for the Weed and Seed. Might point out that some of our people are missing tonight because they are literally in Washington, D.C. right now pounding on the door of the Treasury Department to say let's deal realistically with the home foreclosure issue because we're not going to get past this thing any other way. Having said that, the first thing I want to say is the gentlemen here have done an incredible job. We read over the thing with a fine-tooth comb because it affects our neighborhood severely. I realize putting the information together is very difficult, and I looked at the map there and I think I counted seven homes on my street that were in foreclosure. The fact is there are 13 that are in one stage or another of foreclosure. We were specifically delighted with the emphasis about putting homeowners in our neighborhood. For decades, it's been a 40% homeowner, 60% renter. Until the last 6-7 years, you know, when the housing market just boomed, and things have exactly reversed. In our neighborhood, 60% homeowner to 40% renter, and the improvement of the neighborhood there in West Modesto has been substantial. People who have been gone from my church for decades and then come back to town and they, is this the same place I grew up in? Obviously, things are going downhill at the moment. What we want to plead for without making Patterson and Salida and Ceres and the other cities angry with us and knowing that they are in dire straits as well, is the possibility of more funding for the Weed and Seed neighborhood. Specifically, the Weed and Seed is a, as you know, a federal program out of the Department of Justice. We were the first neighborhood in Stanislaus County recognized as such, and that's not a distinction of honor. That unfortunately means we are a very, very troubled neighborhood. So using federal funds out of HUD obviously only makes sense in a neighborhood like ours. Furthermore, CDBG funds are specifically aimed at poor neighborhoods like our own, and I realize there are certain restrictions that the county has to pay attention to here, and yet the fact of the matter is because the housing in our neighborhood is so much lower in cost than some of our neighboring towns out here, you can get a whole lot more bang for your buck in our area than you can in some of the other fine towns. The population of the Weed and Seed area is larger than many of these towns. The median income is far lower than many of the other towns, and so we would just like you to take that into consideration as you approve this or ask these fine gentlemen to shove a little bit more money our way. And then finally, I would say to you that we have already been in discussion with Anita Hellum at Habitat for Humanity in regard to choosing folks from our neighborhood to have the opportunity to buy these homes, people who we already know as neighbors who are good standing people, and to work with Habitat for the sake of actually beating the estimate that the county has, because this will not be a for-profit contractor that's doing the work. It will be a non-profit organization. I have already taken the liberty of making contact with several of the large churches over here, or several of the large churches in town, who have multiple skilled contractors and laborers who would be more than happy and have a commitment to the Weed and Seed neighborhood to come in and help. So all that to say, we really feel as if we are in a position to, whatever you're going to give us, to expand that into the future, and in conversations with Kirk and Aaron, we believe that there is a good possibility of the county then receiving the money back for homes that have been purchased, and then turning around and giving that money back to, for example, Habitat for Humanity, and we'll just keep it moving. And I think because of the volunteer labor force that I'm talking about, that is not some pie in the sky, but it is a very realistic thing that we can do in the Weed and Seed neighborhood. Well, thank you so much for your time. Do you have any questions?
Any questions from the board?
Question, please. In the program you're proposing, do you have sweat equity like the Habitat Humanity? Is that in your program that you're looking at?
Oh, exactly, because we are looking at working with Habitat, and as we would bring in other churches to work alongside Habitat. Mm-hmm. Well, and the other thing is it's frankly, it's coming up tomorrow at our Weed and Seed Steering Committee meeting. We are formally going to vote yes to urge the Weed and Seed to develop a community development corporation, a CDC, which you are probably all familiar with, which will also then be able to continue this work in the neighborhood. That is at the advice of Raleigh Smith from HUD down in Fresno.
So in the financing, you would be like a co-signer, like in Habitat Humanity, for example, if the payments aren't made. My understanding is Habitat backs up the payment. Is that
we will be, to start off with, we will be working strictly through Habitat.
Okay, that answers the question.
Yeah, we will be working strictly through Habitat. It's you don't form a CDC overnight, so that's on down the road.
You're going to work within the system until you get organized.
There you go.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I just have one question for staff. Being that there's Wheaton Seed area has some unincorporated areas of San Luis County in it, correct?
Yes.
So if the money, if all that $258,000 was expended in the Wheaton Seed area and there still was money remaining in the San Luis County unincorporated area, the pot of funds, those then could be applied for by people in that area? If they're in an unincorporated area?
If they're within the unincorporated area, yes. We had hoped and anticipate that we're also going to be partnering with the City of Modesto in this generalized Wheaton Seed area, because the Wheaton Seed area also includes areas within the city limits as well.
So this is just additional money to Wheaton Seed area?
This is additional money beyond what they have currently, yes.
Beyond all the other areas of unincorporated San Luis County, this is additional money coming.
Specifically identified for the Wheaton Seed area, yes. And it's interesting that he mentioned the CDC, because there are other programs that are available once that CDC, once that corporation gets funded or formed, where they can go out and, as he said, continue these types of programs and leverage these funds and leverage these areas for additional funding in that specific area.
Supervisor Grover?
I was just going to ask a similar question in a little different way. Should things be going very well in the Wheaton Seed and you get to your max 6 units and you find out that things have been successful there and you have capacity in the part that you set aside for the county in general, is there anything that would preclude you from not being able to do additional projects in the Wheaton Seed, in the county part of the Wheaton Seed?
Taking funding from other unincorporated areas that has been allocated and assign it to the Wheaton Seed. I don't believe that we have that flexibility from HUD's own rules. We've allocated specific funding for these specific areas. Aaron, do we have that?
We are encouraged to partner with Modesto, and that's one area where they are not directly targeting, but they have set aside $2 million in giving bonus to the Wheaton Seed and Airport neighborhoods. So through partnership with City of Modesto, we hope to be able to leverage and get more units. That's the goal.
So in all likelihood, this number doubles that we're looking at here, are near to that.
It's led in partnership, yes.
It would seem to me that it wouldn't be a violation of intent if you found that things were working well in Wheaton Seed, and we have up to 88 units set aside in Stanislaus County. I don't know why we wouldn't be able to to use a couple more in there if that's been effective use of money.
We can certainly deal with the units. It's the actual funding that may be a problem, dealing with the rules that we have from the federal government. Unfortunately, this is a very, very strict program on how we go forward with the particular.
And the strictness of the criteria is based on the percentage of need in other areas?
Yes.
In terms of foreclosure and that sort of thing?
Yes.
Okay.
Those three criteria.
So it's more of a formula than maybe we've become aware of. So
it's a formula that was handed to us by the federal government to use. Yes.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I think I thought I heard two different answers between this exchange. If I understand Supervisor Grover correct, he's talking about the $3.7 million that we have allotted for unincorporated areas of the county. And if we spend all the Wheaton Seed money and there's people living in that unincorporated area of San Luis County, however, in the Wheaton Seed area, they could still apply under the Stanislaus County pot of money because they live in unincorporated Stanislaus County.
Right. The challenge is that $3.7 million is broken up to serve the town of Empire, town of Keys, town of Salida, the airport neighborhood, as well as Shackford, Bret Hart area.
Okay, so this is all unincorporated areas.
Correct.
County. This is already pre-designed,
preset with the specific amounts for each of those neighborhoods.
All right.
And that's the restriction that we're at, is we've got a very specific amount for each of those neighborhoods identified.
So once it's appropriated, it's in position.
It's
you don't have the flexibility to change it from one to the other.
No, we do not.
Okay, thank you.
Are there further questions of staff?
But if I might add, those monies can be leveraged.
Seeing none, we'll bring it back to the board for action. I would remind the board that this takes a unanimous vote tonight.
I'll make a motion to approve.
Second it.
Yeah, that's all six staff recommendations?
All six staff recommendations.
Motion's been made by Supervisor O'Brien, seconded by Supervisor Monteith, to accept the six staff recommendations. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Motion's carried. 4-0. Thank you.
Thank you.
And we have no scheduled matters this evening. Correspondence?
This board has received a letter from the State of California Department of Transportation regarding the release of notice of preparation for the draft environmental impact report for the North County Corridor Santa Foss County Connector Project.
Referred to the Department of Public Works.
This board has received a letter from Orange County Supervisors regarding the change in state policy related to financial assurance for habitat mitigation projects that will impact counties and cities.
Report to the Chief Executive Officer, Department of Planning and Community Development, and Department of Public Works.
This board has received a notice from the State of California Fish and Game Commission regarding proposed emergency regulatory action relating to incidental take of long fin smelt.
Refer to the Department of Planning and Community Development.
This board has received a letter from the U.S. Department of Justice Federal Bureau of Prisons, United States Penitentiary, Atwater, regarding the Federal Prison Industries Unicor program that operates an electronic recycling factory.
Refer to the Strategic Business Technology Department and the General Services Agency.
This board has received a letter from the State of California Department of Finance regarding San Luis County's share of shift of property tax revenue funds from redevelopment agencies to K-12 schools.
Refer to the Department of Planning and Community Development.
This board has received the claims as noted on the agenda.
Acknowledge receipt of claims and refer to the Chief Executive Office's Risk Management Division. Are there any Board of Supervisors reports tonight? Well, I do have one here rather briefly. Most of you probably don't know it, but I represent the county on the Rail Commission, which is primarily the Amtrak service through Stanislaus County and goes through the valley. But because I'm on this committee, I've been aware of an attempt by the San Joaquin COG, Fresno, and Kern County COGs to divert $190 million from Proposition 1A, which is the high-speed rail bond. And according to the report, they would hope that they could even divert up to $900 million. And this is for freight trains out of the Port of Oakland through the Crow's Landing Air Base and on to Bakersfield. Well, I have read Proposition 1A, and this is the high-speed rail bond. There is nothing in any portion of Proposition 1A that will divert money, that there's any way to divert it for freight trains. The only thing that that money can be used for is for high-speed train service, and also for passenger rail that connects to the high-speed rail. And specifically, the money for rail that connects to the high speed can only be given to public agencies for inner-city rail corridors. The majority of the people of California voted for a high-speed rail system. Whether you supported that proposition or not, it did pass. And any attempt to hijack money to subsidize short-haul rail freight trains from the Port of Oakland to Crow's Landing or to the Port of Oakland should be opposed. Every taxpayer should be outraged by this attempt to divert money from one project to another project that's entirely different. Now, this project erodes confidence in local government and makes a sham out of the initiative process. And if you think I may be wrong about this or exaggerating about this report, I will make it available to anyone who asks for it. It is called the Altamont San Joaquin Corridor Report. Okay. Any other reports? Legislative and Fiscal Management Report?
And my first comment would be that the county is not an advocate for or involved in any way in the attempt that Mr. Supervisor DeMartini just referenced. We just barely learned about this in the last 48 hours ourselves. So the county is not involved in any attempt to divert high-speed rail monies for a purpose other than for which it was intended. Relative to the state budget, as you well know, the governor has called a special session. This due to the fact that the 2008-2009 budget is estimated to be $11.2 billion short in revenue, and 910 is projected at a $13 billion revenue shortfall. There are a number of proposals that are on the table, including a 1.5% increase in sales tax, 9.9% oil severance tax, and several other revenue-generating proposals. One interesting proposal would provide for the acceleration of numerous infrastructure projects as a way to get resources into the economy to create jobs and to stimulate the economy. So this is something that that we're looking closely at, and we're hopeful that the efforts of the governor are successful. He has some fairly stiff competition in this respect, as part of his proposal does include softening of some CEQA regulations, but it is our understanding at this juncture that the legislature is unlikely to take any action until after the new legislators are seated later next month.
Being no further business, this meeting is adjourned.